everyone. This is Blue Caverly. You're listening to the Divided Kingdom program. We're a news program with a Christian emphasis, and I try to cover all kinds of topics. I'll tell you more about how you can listen to the program various ways a little bit later in the program. But let's start right off with a breaking story. Breaking this morning, and more details are coming out. I won't go into it deeply because probably more and more things will be known about it in the next few days, but it has to do with the White House. Now, the version I had has been all the major networks, but the one I have is from Fox News today, as I record this, June 16th, Tuesday. And the headline reads, FBI disrupts alleged explosive drone plot targeting the White House, UFC event, officials say. This is by Sophia Compton of Fox News. As I say, it appears as I record this on June 16th. In fact, new details keep coming out. The version I have came out at 6 o'clock this morning, but they have more updates, you know, every few hours. And it says the FBI and its law enforcement partners disrupted an alleged plot targeting this weekend's UFC Freedom 250 event in Washington, D.C., officials told Fox News Digital. Five people were in custody as of Monday, and investigators identified 23 people as part of a potential network of plotters. The alleged plan involved using explosive-laden drones to hit buildings near the event, force a mass evacuation, and steer crowds toward a pre-staged sniper team, officials said. A, quote, second wave, unquote, was then allegedly planning to storm the White House gate, according to officials. The FBI first learned of the threat on June 10th and worked with partners to secure probable cause for an arrest in Cincinnati, where one suspect was taken into custody. Now, this is Lou speaking. If you go to the most up-to-date information on Fox News or various other news outlets, they have identified several of the people that are being charged with this crime. And by the time you hear this on Thursday evening, of course, they'll probably have a lot more information. But I wanted to at least introduce the topic. And I'm going to scan down, since some of this will be updated over the next few days, I'll just give you the bare bones. It says investigators uncovered signal chats in which multiple people allegedly discussed attacking the UFC event. An initial review of one suspect's iPhone identified at least 23 signal users. And I know the signal is capitalized. I don't know of a reference earlier in the article to that. Maybe that's just something I'm not familiar with. But anyway, they think there are 23 possible people involved in this, what they call pre-operational activity, in other words, planning. Let's see, some of those involved. Now, back to the article, some of those involved allegedly planned to travel to Fredericksburg, Virginia, on June 12th or 13th, to prepare for the attack. One suspect allegedly told investigators the goal was to target, quote, capitalist elites, billionaires, unquote, or politicians who received donations from the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. And the investigation stretched across at least 12 field offices. FBI Director Kash Patel credited the FBI, Department of Justice, and law enforcement partners with acting quickly across multiple states to prevent the alleged attack. And let me see if there's anything else. There's a good deal more to the article, and it's still fresh. You can no doubt get it on Fox News, at least for a few days. Let me scan down this. The alleged plot targeted UFC Freedom 250, a high-profile White House event held on the South Lawn as part of President Donald Trump's 80th birthday weekend. The event drew an estimated 4,300 attendees, including about 1,200 active-duty service members, as 14 fighters from around the world competed inside a wire mesh cage Sunday night. Reacting to the news, On Fox and Friends Tuesday, Vice President J.D. Vance called it a, quote, very, very dark stuff, unquote. Then he said, this is what happens when people turn the rhetoric up so loud that disagreeing with somebody is a cause for violence. We've got to tell everybody to tone it down. Everybody has a role to cut this stuff out. Vance continued. But I think a lot of my Democratic colleagues in Washington have got to look themselves in the mirror and say, why is so much of this political violence coming from our side of the spectrum? Unquote. All right, I'm going to stop there because this is going to be changing hour by hour, but I want to at least introduce the topic. So that was from Fox News, June 16th, 2026. Now, a little different topic. A few years back, during the COVID crisis, there was a lot of talk about biolabs, especially on the alternative media. There were theories about, did the COVID germ virus escape from a Wuhan, China lab? Now, at the time, the government said, oh, no, it was from bats. Bats gave it to humans. Well, my late wife Elizabeth and I never entirely trusted that, as a lot of conservative people had deep, deep distrust of that whole theory. And a lot is coming out about it, but this article doesn't really go into the COVID era quite so much. This is from the New York Post. It's entitled, Outgoing DNI Tulsi Gabbard Releases Declassified Info on 120 Foreign Biolabs. This is by Josh Christensen and Ellie Goetz. Hope I'm pronouncing the names right. And the date is June 12th, 2026. Dateline Washington. Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard released declassified information Friday on U.S. taxpayer funding of more than 120 biological labs in 30-plus foreign countries, with the ongoing spy chief blasting Biden administration officials for having, quote, lied, unquote, about their existence. As Gabbard said, quote, despite the obvious potential for catastrophic global impact research of dangerous pathogens and biolabs, can have, politicians, so-called health professionals like Dr. Fauci, and entities within the Biden administration's national security team lie to the American people about the existence of U.S.-funded and supported biolabs and threaten those who attempted to expose the truth, unquote. Again, those are the words of Tulsi Gabbard. She continued, ODNI, which is the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, will continue to work closely with partners across the government to identify where these labs are, what pathogens they contain, to end dangerous gain-of-function research that threatens the health and well-being for the American people and people around the world. And it has some good pictures, but of course I can't put those over the radio, so if you want to see those, you'll have to go to the New York Post for June 12th. I don't know why I keep saying January. Here it is. It's going to be 90 degrees here tomorrow, and far from being January. It's June. Now, I'll just interject here. Some of you got our book that Elizabeth and I wrote, Chaos. I got to stop and think of the name now. COVID and Coming Chaos. I'm sorry to say they're all sold out now. They weren't even sold. They were just given away. But you can find a lot of this information online still. A lot of good doctors who didn't toe the line and just become yes men or yes women. Now, these words, gain of function, should ring a bell with a lot of you. Gain of function. They'll talk more about this in the article. Again, this is a somewhat lengthy article, and I only have a limited amount of time, so I'm going to skip around a little bit. that the investigation was conducted pursuant to President Trump's executive order on so-called gain-of-function research, which can make viruses and other pathogens more transmissible. And the Office of the Director of National Intelligence said in a press release, quote, many of these U.S. government-funded biolabs are currently or have previously engaged in research using hazardous and highly contagious pathogens. In some cases, do include dangerous gain-of-function research with very little visibility or oversight, unquote. Around one-third of the biolabs cited in the declassified documents are located in Ukraine, but limit risk of, quote-unquote, compromise due to their having held risky pathogens and being vulnerable amid Russia's war. Well, again, this is Lou speaking. You can imagine what would happen if a Russian drone hit one of these and released whatever kind of pathogens were being worked on there. And here's a list from a little further down in the article. The pathogens, now this is not necessarily in Ukraine itself, but in the various labs around the world, the pathogens included, quote, anthrax, tularemia, tuberculosis, swine fever, Newcastle's disease, MERS, M-E-R-S, SARS, Marburg, Ebola, Lassa, the plague, I assume that's the bubonic plague, rickettsia, and others, according to the files. Or the labs at a total cost to taxpayers of more than $9 million, the records show. And the Russians accused some of the Ukrainian research done in partnership with the U.S. of having been at the level of biological weapons work, the files stated, according to AP. Let me skip down a little bit here. Of course, some of the officials gave some alibis. One person, an expert on biological weapons, Josh Siegel, said they are labs are not now and were never secret and do zero questionable work. Well, maybe so. I'm not in a position to say, but then again, not many people in the world are. All right, let's see. Skipping down again a little bit. Biden's Under Secretary of State for Political Affairs, Victoria Nuland, testified to Congress in March 2022 that, quote, Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of, unquote. But other administration officials dismissed the claims the following day. So it's a he said, she said kind of thing. And us laymen really don't know what to believe. Well, we hope more truth comes out about this. And it just mentions that Tulsi Gabbard will leave her post at the Office of Director of National Intelligence on June 19th. After revealing, she would be stepping down to help her husband with treatment for a rare form of bone cancer. So we wish the best for them. All right, you're listening to The Divided Kingdom. I'm Lou Caverly. If you listen in the old days, I called myself Lou Blanchard. So now I go with my real name. Lou is my middle name. And I've always used that for the show. And up till a little more than a year ago, my wife Elizabeth took a big part in it. I'm sad to say she passed away in February a year ago. So I'm doing it on my own now. If you want to look at the website that's been set up, we have a very, very lovely lady, Angel, who keeps it maintained. And the website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. DividedKingdomRadio.com. On the website, you can find all the different ways you can listen to the program. You can go to the archives. I've had a little trouble myself bringing up some of the archive shows on my smartphone and using my smartphone and the so-called hotspot in conjunction with my laptop. On the other hand, when I went to the public library and used their computers, it worked just fine. So I'm just not tech savvy enough to be able to say just what's going on with that. But I would say if you can get the archives at home sometime and you want to listen to some past shows, well, then the best bet is go to the public library, use their facilities. They probably have pretty up-to-date computers in most of those. Let's see now. What was I going to say? A little senior moment here. Yes. You can find the various venues to listen to the program. The simplest way is just to tune in Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can go to WWCR.com and listen to it on the Internet. Or you can listen via shortwave radio, if you have one of those, also at 8 p.m. Eastern Time each week. And the frequency for the shortwave is 4.840 megahertz. Now, as you know, short waves can be notorious. It'll go long distances, but on any given night, it may not have good reception. I always remember reading a book that was, to me, a fascinating book by William L. Shirer, who was the author of the famous history book, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And Shirer's book called The Nightmare Years, which is about his own experiences as a reporter in Nazi Germany for CBS News, comments on the fact that when he first joined CBS, he almost didn't sign up with them because his shows didn't get through from Berlin to New York City. The shortwave just didn't carry. But then a couple nights later, it went through beautifully. And so he did sign up with CBS News and was a famed reporter in those days leading up to World War II. So don't get discouraged if this shortwave isn't all that good or even may not be able to be heard. There are other ways you can hear it, and there are other frequencies. And to see those in depth, I won't take up all your time now, but you can go to the website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. You can also hear the program repeated on Saturday morning at 7.490 megahertz at 8 o'clock in the morning, 8 a.m., also Eastern Time, 7.490. And again, you can also just go directly to WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio, WWCR.com, and listen. They have three or four transmitters, so you just have to take a look and see which one is the one you want. I've updated the list of past shows, a brief summary of what's on each show for the months of May, and I think April as well, and the first part of June. So if you go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, go to where it says past shows in the menu, and you can see a quick outline. All right, if you'd like to write to me, you can write to Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. If you didn't get that, I'll repeat it once or twice more during the program. Well, now back to some of the articles. Do you have children? Grandchildren? Elizabeth and I never had children, but we do have several nieces and nephews that we care, and now I should say I care deeply about. Looking forward to seeing one of them in August when he has his, well, actually October when he has his second birthday. But this is an article if you have any relatives who are young. It's a short article. I would have thought it would be longer, but perhaps more will be written later. This appeared in the Western Journal on June 14th by Spencer Lombardo. And the title is AI Making Your Kids Dumber? Over half of teachers surveyed say it may be. Now, I'm the first to admit I don't know much about AI. And at my age, I probably never will. I probably have taken advantage of it without ever knowing it. When I do searches on the Internet, when I do even things for my bank, probably the bank uses it without my knowing it. Well, in the field of education, apparently it's getting a lot of use. And this article says this: most teachers are concerned about their students' education amid the blooming artificial intelligence revolution, a recent survey shows. 54% of K-12 teachers say AI is making it harder for their students to learn critical thinking skills. Ipsos, and I have to admit I'm not quite sure what Ipsos is, but Ipsos reported Friday, that was what they reported. NPR, National Public Radio, and Ipsos surveyed a representative sample of teachers between April 27th and May 5th of this year. 40% of teachers said AI has had a negative effect on education, whereas only 9% said it's been positive, according to the survey. Additionally, 57% of teachers said AI is making it harder to assess that student's knowledge level, and 59% said AI is tarnishing trust between them and their students. Despite 78% of surveyed teachers saying they believe students should be taught how to responsibly use AI, over half, 50% of the teachers said that their school has not offered clear guidance on AI. And I'll inject here, as a former teacher myself, although they don't quite come out and say it, I would imagine this has a lot to do with the idea of what work the teacher receives is actually being done by the student, what work is being done by AI, and is that going to make it so easy the students won't do too much of any work and won't learn much as a result. I can see that happening in math. And even over the last few years, some of my English teacher friends have said, well, we have to be very careful because a lot of what the students pass in, or at least some of it, is actually what they've gotten off of the internet. You can actually go to the internet, and if you type in a topic, let's say Daniel Boone. Coach is supposed to do a report on Daniel Boone. You can find reports ready-made at certain websites. Now, there are some things teachers can use to try to avoid this plagiarism, because after all, what does it teach a student? How to push some buttons is what it teaches the student. And that would be one example. Same thing in English. Probably similar things in a little different slant in math, science, and so forth. Well, getting back to the article now, it says, however, 69%, now this is the teachers, 69% said AI has made them more efficient, according to Ipsos. It doesn't say how. Stanford's Educational Opportunity Project estimated that reading scores declined in 83% of school districts where data was available in 2025 compared to 2015. The New York Times reported on May 13th. Math scores also reportedly declined in 70% of school districts over that same time period. Now, it doesn't say that's due to AI, and in fact, it probably isn't, because that covers a 10-year period, and AI has only been available for a pretty short time. But something has caused those scores to go way down. That's very shocking, that 83% of the school districts that would supply data, these reading scores declined, 70% the math scores declined. And this is low speaking now. This is a very shocking thing for the future of our country. I guess it's no surprise that when Elizabeth was in the hospital, her final stay, and a very large percent of the doctors who came to visit her were obviously foreign with foreign accents. I'm sure there are fine American doctors. In fact, I go to one. But this is a shock that should make every American concerned. What's wrong with the education of our children and grandchildren? Well, I'm not sure that anyone is quite sure, but it's clearly a national concern. And unless you think that AI is the passing fad, it says big tech, this is in the article again, big tech will likely spend $5.3 trillion on AI in fiscal years 2025 through 2030. Goldman Sachs projected on June 3rd. Well, that's all this article has, and I'm sure there are many other good articles on this topic. As I say, it's something that will be of concern to any adult who has children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and even just friends among families that have those. I don't have any children, so naturally no grandchildren, but I do have nieces and nephews, and it's a rare person who doesn't. So I'm concerned about this, especially as a former teacher. This again appeared in the Western Journal. Actually, they got it from the Daily Caller, which has some good articles. Is AI making your kids dumber? June 14th, if you want to look it up. So it's pretty current, pretty recent. Now, we're going to switch gears to an entirely different topic. Here from the New York Post on June 16th by Chris Nessi, N-E-S-I. Jeffrey Epstein tried to kill himself multiple times in jail. Several nooses found in cell. Bombshell report claims. Well, before I read the article, we all, I think, if we covered the, covered the story at all, read about it at all, we know that a lot of people would have much preferred Jeffrey Epstein never go to trial, never testify, because too many famous people were wrapped up with this guy. And rumors have abounded ever since his death that he was killed. This takes a little different slant. This says, more or less, when you read between the lines, he was allowed to commit suicide. Perhaps even encouraged, who knows. Well, let's see what it says. Disgraced financier and child sex offender Jeffrey Epstein tried to end his life at least three times before his successful attempt, and his cell was found strewn with nooses after his August 2019 death, according to a new investigation into the late pedophile's death. Ex-New York cop and convicted murderer Nicholas Tartaglione, age 56, who briefly shared a cell with Epstein at the now-shuttered Metropolitan Correctional Center, told the New York Times. So I'll interject. This is not some little tabloid. This is a major American newspaper that has this story. So he told the New York Times that he was point-blank asked how to make a noose by the sex trafficker days before his first reported attempt on July 22, 2019. Epstein had just returned to his cell after a judge denied him bail. It was his 13th day in custody. And I have a number of pictures you can see if you go to this New York Post article. Over the next few days, Tartaglione said he twice witnessed Epstein making preparations to kill himself. In one incident, he recalled Epstein had tied a sheet to a grate over a cell window. Another time, he woke up to find Epstein looking, quote, a little suspicious, unquote, in the darkened cell before finding a noose under his mattress, the Times reported. That's New York Times. Tartaglione told the outlet that he reported both attempts to jail guards, but they laughed him off. His account, however, was backed up by another inmate, Peter Bright, who recalled Tartaglione telling him about the previous attempts shortly after Epstein's death. An evidence photo of Epstein's cell after he died shows heaps of sheets he was not supposed to have, and multiple nooses and strips of fabric. I actually have a picture of that on this article that you could see. On July 22nd, less than 3 weeks before Epstein was found dead in a cell, Tartaglione found him motionless on the floor of the cell with an orange fabric noose draped around his neck. The pedophile had initially claimed to corrections officers that his cellmate tried to kill him. An internal prison investigation cleared Tartaglione of any connection to the incident. But Epstein was eventually found dead on the morning of August 10th. His cell was strewn with various linens, which he was not allowed to have, including several nooses and strips of orange fabric that could easily be fashioned into a noose. There are several good pictures there. One or two a little gory. You may not want to look at them all. That's from the New York Post, June 16th of this year. All right, now another whole different topic from the Gateway Pundit. That's a little news outlet that has a lot of good stories you don't always find in the mainstream news. This one says North Carolina student wins massive legal settlement after school accused her of vandalism over a pro-Charlie Kirk message painted on rock. This is by Michael Chance, Gateway Pundit, June 15th, 2026. A North Carolina high school student was accused of vandalism and investigated after she painted a pro-Charlie Kirk message on a rock on the school's campus that has historically been used by students in this way. Now the student is sitting on top of a gigantic pile of money, having won a legal settlement over the way she was targeted for this. There was absolutely nothing offensive in the messages she painted on the rock. The school only acted because the message was about Charlie Kirk. The student's First Amendment rights were violated. And here's some of the details. Fox News reports North Carolina student wins $95,000 after school accused her of vandalizing Spirit Rock with a Charlie Kirk tribute. And it gives some details here. The controversy revolved around painting a campus Spirit Rock with a Bible verse and a patriotic message in tribute to the late Turning Point USA founder, Charlie Kirk. And I'll just summarize this. Fox News reports that the settlement was reached this week between the family of Audrey, Cal High School student Gabby Stout, and the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Board of Education. Under the terms of the agreement, the school board will adopt a new free speech policy, issue a public statement expressing regret, and pay $95,000 to South's legal team at Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF. Let's see now. And the settlement comes 6 months after the Stouts filed a federal lawsuit alleging rampant violations of the students' First Amendment rights. And Stout told Fox News Digital this settlement ultimately clears her name. And they say this was an expensive lesson for the school. The less hysteria of a conservative sometimes makes them behave quite stupidly. That from the Gateway Pundit, June 15th, by Mike LaChance. Now, I should comment there, it would be different if this was vandalism, but she was simply writing on a rock that many other students had written on in the past. So, it was just an ordinary thing that many students did. Okay. Again, if you'd like to write to me, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your comments, good or bad. And if you can give a little support, got several kind people send me donations this week that'll help to keep the program on the air. It costs them, on an average month, about $600 to produce a program. And those months that have an extra Thursday, and I believe this is one of them, five Thursdays instead of four, than a 700. So it's not cheap, but thankfully, kind folks who listen to the program have helped keep it going. If you can make a contribution, we'd love to have you. If you can just write a letter to us, tell us how you listen. Do you listen shortwave, internet? What method do you use? And you can write to me, Lou Caverly, and that's last name is spelled C-A-V-E-R-L-Y. And the address is Post Office Box 28, The little town I live in is Bethlehem, just like the name in the Bible. Bethlehem, state is Maryland, and the zip code is 21609. So I'd love to hear from you. Well, what else do we have here? This appeared, and I don't have a date for some reason, but it's within the last 2 weeks. This appeared on the Oxford, that would be the Oxford, England, Mail, M-A-I-L, probably a small town newspaper. But it comments on something in all of Great Britain. And the title was Winston Churchill, quote, seen as divisive, unquote, to feature on £5 notes. So definitely British, because they're talking pounds, not dollars. This is by Matt Simpson. Just a short article here, just a one-pager. The wartime leader who was born at Blenheim Palace has been praised over decades for rallying Britons during World War II to defeat fascism from Germany. But research carried out by market consultancy Savanta in October last year suggested having the wartime prime minister on a note risked promoting a, quote, backward-looking vision of the UK, unquote, that could prove divisive, the Telegraph reports. Telegraph being another newspaper. So they're talking about paper money. And it says that Winston Churchill, who was one of the key people, if not the key person, that helped Britain survive the Nazis until the U.S. got into the war, and Russia as well got into the war, was attacked by Germany. He's just too controversial for the modern-day woke people, apparently. Going on with the article, other controversial figures include codebreaker Alan Turing and novelist Jane Austen, who are viewed by some as being not representative of the UK's cultural and natural diversity, unquote. Well, Jane Austen wrote some time ago, a few centuries ago. So, if all you're looking for is diversity, well, no, maybe she's not like the people of today. And do we want her to be? Some of her novels, like Jane Eyre, Emma, Pride and Prejudice, have survived. I've got the wrong person there. I'm going to get some letters about that. If my wife Elizabeth was still living, she'd reprimand me. Jane Eyre was Charlotte Bronte. But I got the other ones right. Emma. And there's a little funny story there. I had to read Emma in a novels course. Now, why was a math major taking a novels course? Well, teachers have to take courses every so often just to keep their teaching certificates. Usually because I took math courses or just general education courses. But once I had this girlfriend, this is long before I knew my wife-to-be, Elizabeth, I had this girlfriend who was an English major. I was really deeply enamored of her, and she was taking this novel course, so I said, I'll take it too. Well, our relationship didn't blossom out. We remained good friends. We still correspond. But one of the books we had to read was Emma. That's how this little digression came about. Good novel, too. I really enjoyed it. But it's not going to be a novel about 20th century people or 21st century people because it was written, I think, maybe in the late 1700s, early 1800s. But to me, that doesn't make it a bad novel any more than Shakespeare's bad because he wrote a few hundred years ago. I wouldn't want to classify Hamlet or Macbeth as bad plays. Well, anyway, getting back, Alan Turing, by the way, was one of the men who was responsible for breaking the German codes in World War II. Another thing that helped to give Britain survival until Russia and the U.S. joined the war. But now they are passé, I guess. So reading on, the report recommended banknotes should feature nature, arguing animals in the natural world would be less controversial. Okay, I'll buy that. Gear and moose are not very controversial. According to the paper, the findings were delivered to the Bank of England months before it announced plans to replace historic figures from notes, that is, banknotes. The Bank of England said the theme for the new banknotes was selected after a public consultation was launched in July last year and received 44,000 responses. Earlier this month, the Bank of England launched a consultation for the public to give their views on a selection of wildlife native to the UK that will appear on the next series of notes. Okay. Now, to go to a little sort of an apology here, Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey said, quote, "Celebrating our country's great heritage and the people who have contributed so much to it is important. That's why we have been proud to honor individuals, including William Shakespeare, Florence Nightingale, and more recently, Sir Winston Churchill," unquote. So I guess he means in the past they have celebrated them, but now it's the animals that will be celebrated. And maybe plants, too. Okay. Now we're going to switch over. That was from a publication called the Oxford Mail, but I think if you type in Winston Churchill on the internet and go to the tab marked News, you might be able to find equivalent coverage of this topic. All right, now we've got a bunch to choose from here. Which one should we do next? Oh, so much good to choose from. The time is fleeting here. Well, let's go with this one. Deadly tapeworm, fox tapeworm to be more exact, linked to lethal disease detected in West Coast wildlife. Going to have to kind of summarize the next couple. I see our time has just gone so fast. This is from Fox News by Shiv Sudhakar. I hope I said his name right or her name. June 15th, a parasitic tapeworm known as Echinococcus multilocularis, often called the fox tapeworm, has been detected for the first time in West Coast wildlife. The University of Washington researchers discovered the tapeworm, which can cause a rare but potentially deadly disease in humans, and 37 out of 100 coyotes sampled near Puget Sound in Washington State. And I want to skip down a little bit. The reason the cases are so high, this is a quote, "The reason the cases are so high in coyotes is because they are regularly eating raw rodents. That's the primary way for them to get infected," said lead author Yasmin Antati, who recently graduated from UVV with a doctorate in environmental and forest science. Now, what is UVV? University of Washington. That's probably what it is. The studies, genetic testing, showed the coyotes carried a newer, more infectious European variant that has become the predominant strain in the U.S. and Canada. And prior to the 2010s, this parasitic tapeworm was extremely rare in North America, with cases largely confined to remote islands in Alaska, the author said. But over the last 15 years, its range has expanded, with dog and human infections increasing across the Midwestern U.S. and Canada, according to past reports. And I'm going to skip down a little bit here. Most cases of the echinococcosis are diagnosed in patients who immigrated from or traveled to Central and East Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa. The tapeworm is transmitted among wild animals known as canids, typically cycling from foxes to rodents and back to foxes, and is often referred to as the fox tapeworm. Humans can get sick from accidentally ingesting worm eggs after handling contaminated soil or eating contaminated food. They can also get the infection by handling a pet that has the tapeworm and touching their mouth, according to the Cleveland Clinic. Symptoms to watch for? Let's see. lot of technical description here, but I'll read down. Symptoms can include abdominal pain or increased belly size if it infects the liver, or coughing and shortness of breath if the lungs are infected. These signs usually do not appear until the cysts grow large enough to press on healthy organs and tissues, according to the CDC. Okay, so good deal more technical stuff there. If you're interested, go to Fox News, June 15th. Look for the heading Deadly Fox Tapeworm, etc. All right, and there's a little bit of politics involved. I don't think I'll read any of this one, but the headline from the Washington Times says, political blame game follows as screwworm parasite threatens cattle in Texas. So, oh, this is a different worm. This is a screwworm. No, it's a tapeworm. I'll just read a paragraph or two. Here, screwworms are on their way to becoming a billion dollar international problem, but can be contained if ranchers are vigilant, watch their herds and other wildlife, and quickly treat any infestations. And she pointed, as an example, to a calf where screwworms were found 6 days earlier in a wound where its umbilical cord had been attached. And let's see, Brooke Rollins, that's U.S. Agriculture Secretary, Brooke Rollins said, the calf couldn't be happier. He's bouncing around the pasture. Screwworms are flies that lay their eggs in the wounds of warm-blooded animals and feed on the living flesh rather than dead tissue. Scientists say releasing sterile flies to mate with females is the most effective way to control the population, a strategy that has worked for decades. All right, that gives you a little idea. If you want to read the details on that, that came from the Washington Times, Thursday, June 11th. Political game, a blame game, follows. And I didn't read about the blame game, but I guess that's a little later in the article. But in the interest of time, all right, let's change gears again. There's a new movie coming out that Steven Spielberg has been working on called Disclosure Day. I haven't seen it. I'm not even sure it's out yet. But this was from the Washington Times. It says, no, Steven Spielberg, alien life shouldn't mess up anyone's faith. This is by Billy Howell in the Washington Times, Saturday, June 13th, 2026. Legendary movie director Steven Spielberg sparked a viral reaction with recent comments questioning how alien disclosure could affect people's religious beliefs. Now, lest we hear something, this is Lou speaking. Some of you, well, there aren't many of you that are old enough to remember the War of the Worlds on the radio. I certainly can, because it was 1938. Orson Welles. Enacted with a bunch of other fine actors, a radio play based upon H.G. Wells' novella, The War of the Worlds, about an invasion of the USA by Martians from outer space. That created, as many of you have read about, a big panic. A lot of people didn't hear his initial introduction or a statement midway through the play that said it was a dramatization, not a real news broadcast. But the program was arranged in the form of a news broadcast that made it sound like things were happening on the spot. Now, people had actually stopped to think. They would have realized that all of this couldn't happen in so short a time. The program only lasted probably 45 minutes, possibly 1 hour at most. And you couldn't have an astronomer talking about explosions on Mars and then the craft coming to Earth and then them spreading all up through New Jersey into New York State, you know, in that short time. Common sense would have told you that, but common sense doesn't always win out in times like that, panic. Now, less than anyone should panic about this, there has been no disclosure This is a fictional movie. There may never be any disclosure, for all we know. I've always been interested in UFOs, but never seen a real one. Never expect to. And I do have my doubts that what are classified as UFOs are anything more than unknown phenomena. But I wouldn't rule it out, since I really don't know. But let's move on with this, since we are running short on time. Legendary movie director Steven Spielberg sparked a viral reaction with recent comments questioning how alien disclosure could affect people's religious beliefs. Mr. Spielberg said during a June 7th interview with CBS Morning News, CBS Sunday Morning, quote, "If this truth were just known overnight, if the government announced, yes, we have been keeping this from you since 1947, that would mess up a lot of people. And that's concerning the highly anticipated UFO-themed film, Disclosure Day." The Jurassic Park director went on to discuss how his movie tackles the question of how people of faith might react to the news that human beings are not the only intelligent life in the universe. Mr. Spielberg said, quote, "And the movie also takes the position of the church. What does this do to the fundamental beliefs that many of us have? Is God our God only on this planet? Or is God a God for every system, whether civilization, intelligent life, and even developing life?" Unquote. And now we're back to the author Billy Howell's words. Mr. Spielberg is hitting on something that has been getting a fair bit of attention in theological circles: the potential impact the existence of alien life would have on Americans, and in particular, those who have faith, members of a faithful organization, the church, in other words, or synagogue for that matter, or a mosque even. And this is Billy Howell speaking, "I've had numerous conversations with devout Christians who have echoed Mr. Spielberg's contentions. Some have even openly postulated that their own faith might be challenged if they discover that sentient alien life is a reality that's been intentionally kept in the shadows. But I'm not quite sure why alien life would be such a challenge, a barrier to people's faith. One element that has emerged in the faith conversation surrounds salvation. If Christians believe Jesus came, died, and resurrected to save the sins of humanity, how do aliens fit into this mix? Especially if they're floating around the universe, exercising free will." Well, I'm going to have to jump down here. He mentions that John 3:16, that famous verse, reads, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." He quotes from the New King James Version. And other scriptures make it clear that Jesus died for all people. This is indicated in Titus 2:11, 1 Timothy 2:5 and 6, and with other verses pointing to Christ's sacrifice for humanity. Some might ponder why this matters to the conversation about aliens and UFOs. Among other topics, some have wondered how Jesus could have died for aliens with hypothetical free will. But such a concept isn't biblically unprecedented. In fact, angels, spiritual beings described in Scripture as ministering spirits, created to serve humanity, also have free will. But according to the previous verses, these spiritual beings are not part of the biblical salvation plan, which appears to be intended exclusively for humanity. Among other verses, 2 Peter 2:4 indicates that, quote, God did not spare angels when they sinned, and that he, quote, sent them to hell. Even the Old Testament seems to paint a scenario in which angels obey the Lord. Such language seems to indicate that they have agency and choice. Well, I see that our time is running out. If you want to read the whole thing by Billy Howell, and he, by the way, is a digital TV host and the interviewer for FaithWire and CBN News and the co-host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, you can go to the Washington Times. That was the source article. Washington Times by Billy Howell, Saturday, June 13th, 2019. 2026. And the title of the article was, "No, Steven Spielberg, Alien Alliance shouldn't mess up anyone's face." Well, we haven't got the Alien Alliance yet. And who knows if we ever will. There have been claims, all kinds of claims, some seemingly by trustworthy people, military people, police, clergymen. But what it all means, I don't begin to know. Well, our time is just about up. Again, if you'd like to write to me, Director Luke Haverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, and our zip code is 21609. And go to our website. You can find, as I've said, I've updated the programs. I need to put a few essays in. Our essays have become old, although some of them are still quite good. And the name of the website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. DividedKingdomRadio.com. You can find other ways to listen to the program. And other times, our lady that does our website has one or two networks of her own. Last I knew, she had two of them. And if you go to our website, you're going to look those up and find out what time this program is on. So if you miss it on Thursday night or on Saturday morning, you can instead hear it at those times. And I hear our music coming on. So once again, I want to thank you all for listening. And again, this program does have a Christian emphasis. Elizabeth and I planned it that way while she was still living. We did it for many years with the two of us together. I hope some point to have a partner, not a lifetime partner, but a partner to deal with the program. Hopefully a lady who will give a feminine point of view to the program. But in the meantime, I'm doing my best to give a wide range of topics. So I want to thank you all for listening. And tune in again next week. But we'll have a whole new set of topics. Good night.